The Lonely Years, 1876 to 1891, Volume 3, Chapter 18. 1883, The Spirit of Prophecy Challenged. Spending a weekend in Ukiah, 50 miles north of Healdsburg, in early December, 1882, Ellen White learned of a storm of calumny and reviling that troubled the new little company of believers there. She wrote, "Our hearts are made glad as we see this little center of converts to the truth advancing step by step, growing stronger amid opposition. They are becoming better acquainted with the suffering part of religion. Our Savior instructed His disciples that they should be despised for His name's sake. Blessed are ye when men shall revile you, and persecute you, and shall say all manner of evil against you falsely, for my sake." Manuscript 5, 1882. In part this opposition was because of the maintaining by Seventh-day Adventists that the gift of the Spirit of Prophecy is present in the Church. "Everything has been said about me that could be," she commented, Letter 24, 1882. Usually a first-hand acquaintance with Ellen White sufficed to counter many of the objections raised against her. At Ukiah, arrangements were made for her to speak to the townspeople in the courthouse in the evening after the Sabbath and again Sunday night. "The courthouse was crowded," she reported, ibid. As she wrote of the experience, she declared, "Our work is to sow the seed, not knowing which shall prosper, this or that. Our work is not to meet and contradict the variety of false statements men will make about me and my work. These men, professing to be messengers of God, publish and preach that which is most agreeable to their own natures. They pour out from unsanctified hearts and lips the basest falsehoods, that have no foundation in truth. Why don't you meet them? Why don't you resort to the law?" Says one, "This is not my work." I ask, did Jesus do this when he was on earth? He had to meet just such things. He was abused and insulted. He was reviled, but he reviled not again. He was pursued with falsehood and with calumny. He passed on, doing his work with fidelity whether meeting censure or praise, Manuscript 5, 1882. The activities of Ellen White in California through the winter, spring, and summer of 1883 were described by the editor of the Signs of the Times, J. H. Wagoner. Although Sister White has been some time in California, she has kept so steadily at writing at her home in Healdsburg that we have seen her very seldom, and the church has not been often favored with her personal labors. Indeed, her writing has so engrossed her time and attention that she has done comparatively little traveling and speaking in this state since the camp meeting, at Hanford, May 10 to 16, 1881. But we never saw a time when her labor was better appreciated here than the present, the Signs of the Times, August 16, 1883. The intensity of the warfare, she was aware, of course, of the warfare against her work, and particularly alert to the deplorable conditions existing in the Battle Creek Church. With the closing of the college in the summer of 1882, the outgoing president, Dr. McLern, and his family remained in the city for some months, seemingly at a loss to know what to do. Matters were greatly complicated by the sympathetic attitude Uriah Smith and the Battle Creek Church had toward him. McLern declared that he had been treated unfairly, even though his salary of $800 a year exceeded that of any other Seventh-day Adventist executive or minister. He threatened to bring suit against the church and declared he would publish against Seventh-day Adventists if justice, as he saw it, was not done to him at the forthcoming General Conference session. Wrote G. I. Butler to Ellen White on November 28, 1882, "He has no faith, whatever, in the testimonies, I think, and looking at things as he does, it will be a hard matter to hold on long." Butler thought McLern would soon affiliate with the Seventh-day Baptists, which he eventually did, but not before linking up for a time with the split-off group at Marion, Iowa. In this, a Seventh-day Adventist attorney of Battle Creek, J. S. Green, joined him. Working with A.C. Long, of the Church of God, Adventist, the two engaged in writing articles and tracts against Ellen White and the administration of the Seventh-day Adventist Church that were widely distributed, especially among Adventists. G. W. Amidon stated, "Such an outburst of malevolence would hardly be expected in his, McLern's, case." R.H. Supplement, August 14, 1883. The republication in 1882 of the three earliest E.G. White works and early writings triggered the Church of God group, joined by McLern and Green, to a new attack in their church organ, the Sabbath Advocate. In the spring of 1883, I.C. Long issued a 16-page pamphlet titled Comparison of the Early Writings of Mrs. White with Later Publications. Then the trio of dissidents united in the production of an extra of the Sabbath Advocate, in which were presented a number of criticisms of Ellen White. At first, the criticism was ignored. Then its wide distribution, especially among Adventists, gave rise to questions demanding answers. The first answer came from the pen of Walcott Littlejohn in the Review in May, 1883. "The beginning of a turnaround in Battle Creek to aid in the crisis situation at Battle Creek, Little John had been asked in January to take charge of District No. 3. The Battle Creek Church, with its 497 members, the Review and Herald, April 17, 1883, comprised the largest part of the district. This was done with the understanding that he would take the special oversight of that church, Ibid, January 30, 1883. Within 2 weeks it was announced that he would render special assistance on the review, signing articles WHL, Ibid, February 13, 1883. This move was made to bring in a more positive influence in the Battle Creek Church and in the contents of the review. On February 18, Butler wrote to Ellen White of this move, declaring, "Brother Littlejohn seems to be decided on the right side and to be firm and clear-sighted. He expressed himself as fearful of a great crisis in the near future. Testifying to the effectiveness of his ministry is a news note in the review of April 17 titled, Bright Spots in Battle Creek, in which it is reported. On Sunday afternoon, April 8, a large percentage of the members of the church convened in the auditorium of the tabernacle to attend to the business of the regular church quarterly meeting. On that occasion resolutions were passed acknowledging the truthfulness of the testimony which condemned the church for the course pursued by them in the college troubles, and expressing an earnest desire for the reopening of the college in the near future, and pledging a hearty support to the trustees in carrying out whatever plan they may adopt for the management of the school. On a previous occasion resolutions had been passed by the church, expressing an earnest desire that Elder G. I. Butler, who was residing in South Lancaster so that his children could be in an Adventist school, should return to this place, and favor the church with his valuable labors. At this time a letter was read from him acknowledging the receipt of the resolutions, and expressing his intention to return to Battle Creek at no distant date, Ibid, April 17, 1883. Then on a triumphant note the report concludes, "On the whole, the cloud seems to be lifting, and sunshine of God's favor to be resting again upon the church." With a strong base of support in the majority of the church officers and members, Little John began to get positive materials into the review. The issue of May 8 carried the first of a series of three rather scholarly articles on Seventh-day Adventists and the testimony of Jesus Christ. The way was being prepared for a comprehensive, sound answer to the blast from Marion, Iowa, in the extra of the Sabbath Advocate. On August 14, 1883, a 16-page Review and Herald supplement was published, dealing with the main issues raised by the Church of God writers. The entire issue of 624 column inches was given to a defense of Ellen White and the Spirit of Prophecy. It included items from such men as Uriah Smith and W. C. Gage, whose influence had been something less than in full support of the Spirit of Prophecy and the stance of church administration. The comparatively short items contributed by Smith and Gage expressed their position on Ellen White's visions, claiming confidence and support but expressing their viewpoints, which were somewhat at variance from those held by the body of Adventists. Butler came out strongly in full support of the Spirit of Prophecy as represented in Ellen White and her work. In the heart of one six-column article titled The Visions, How They Are Held Among Seventh-day Adventists, he declared, "They have always been held in high esteem by the most zealous and humble among us from the start. They have first called attention to every important move we have made in advance. Our publishing work, the health and temperance movement, the college, and the cause of advanced education, the missionary enterprise, and many other important points have owed their efficiency largely to this influence. We have found in a long, varied, and, in some instances, sad experience, the value of their counsel. When we have heeded them, we have prospered. When we have slighted them, we have suffered a great loss." R.H. Supplement, August 14, 1883. Ellen White enters the fray. Seldom did Ellen White pause to notice criticism of her work. But in this instance she felt she should say something that would be helpful to those meeting the charges brought against her. In early August she wrote an article for the Review and Herald, recognizing the conflict and reminding the readers that this was the kind of situation she had met from beginning days. The article, titled Our Present Position, was published in the issue of August 28, 1883. Early in the article she observed, "There are many who consider it a mark of intelligence to doubt, and they pride themselves upon their ability to devise objections to God's word, to his truth, or to those who proclaim it." Ibid, August 28, 1883. Coming more to the point, she admonished, "Brethren and sisters, let not your souls be disturbed by the efforts of those who so earnestly seek to arouse distrust and suspicion of Sister White. These attacks have been repeated hundreds of times during the past 40 years, but my labors have not ceased. The voice of warning, reproof, and encouragement has not been silenced. The evil reports framed concerning me have injured those who circulated them, but have not destroyed my work. Before some of these opposers had an existence, I was shown what would come, and from what source. In the day of God, those who have been seeking to prove me a deceiver must answer for their course. Many ask, why do you not contradict these reports? Why allow them to be circulated? The same question has been asked again and again for the last 40 years. My answer is, in the language of one of old, I am doing a great work and cannot come down ibid, in words of assurance she declared. Brethren and sisters, have no fears that I shall become disheartened by the cruel attacks of my enemies. I expect them in greater measure, and only wonder that they have not been more frequent. Think of Jesus. How much was said against him. The adversary of souls is constantly seeking to divert our minds by bringing inside issues. Let us not be deceived. Let enemies handle your name and mine as they please. Let them distort, misrepresent our words and deeds. Let them fabricate falsehoods as best pleases them. Leave Sister White in the hands of God. If the work in which she is engaged be of God, it will prosper, otherwise it will come to naught. But remember that your own eternal interests are now at stake. Many are in reality fighting his, Satan's, battles while they profess to serve under the banner of Christ. These traitors in the camp may not be suspected, but they are doing their work to create unbelief, discord, and strife. Such are the most dangerous of foes. While they insinuate themselves into our favor and gain our confidence and sympathy, they are busy suggesting doubts and creating suspicion. They work in the same manner as did Satan in heaven when he deceived the angels by his artful representations, ibid, to Smith she declared of the publishing of the Sabbath Advocate. I hear the muttering of the dragon from Marion, but I expected worse than this because it is not the men who do this, but Satan behind them. They are merely men, but agents of Satan. It is his power we meet in them, Letter 14, 1883. In an unusual move, she paused in her book preparation and wrote a 16-page explanation and defense. It opened, my attention has recently been called to a 16-page pamphlet published by A.S.E. Lone of Marion, Iowa, entitled Comparison of the Early Writings of Mrs. White with Later Publications. The writer states that portions of my earlier visions, as first printed, have been suppressed in the work recently published under the title Early Writings of Mrs. E.G. White, and he conjectures as a reason for such suppression that these passages teach doctrines now repudiated by us as a people. He also charges us with willful deception in representing early writings as a complete republication of my earliest views, with only verbal changes from the original work. Before I note separately the passages which are said to have been omitted, as she does in this statement, it is proper that several facts be stated in Manuscript 4, 1883, published in full and selected messages 1:59-73. The prime question related to her first vision is published in 1847 as an article in the James White pamphlet A Word to the Little Flock. In a move to inform those who question the precise wording, the Review and Herald reprinted the article in full and advertised it for sale for 3 cents a copy, the Review and Herald, August 28, 1883. Through the winter and early spring of 1883, Ellen White had kept close to her writing as she was striving to finish her work on Spirit of Prophecy, Volume 4, and to complete the book on the life and teachings of the Apostle Paul. Butler was eager to have her attend camp meetings during the summer. On February 18, 1883, he wrote to her, "How much I wish you might get Volume 4 out this winter so you could labor in the camp meetings the coming year. Your labors are greatly needed in several conferences. I think your labors would be highly appreciated by most of our people." As summer came and her book work was going well, she fixed her eyes on the dates for the Eastern camp meetings to start August 22 at Worcester, Massachusetts. Finally, her communication to the president of the General Conference led him to feel he could count on her help. He notified the readers of the August 7th Review and Herald that Sister E.E.G. White may be able to attend the New England meeting if her health is sufficient to endure the long journey from California. With Sarah McKenterfer as a traveling companion, Ellen White left California by train for Battle Creek. She arrived Friday, August 17th. She went to the home of Edson and Emma for the night and then to the sanitarium. Almost immediately she was involved in meetings. The weekend in Battle Creek being in Battle Creek brought back many memories, and she did not sleep well that Friday night. Sabbath morning she spoke in the tabernacle, and Sunday morning to the workers in the Review and Herald office. She described that meeting in a letter to William and Mary in Oakland. I spoke to the workers in the Review office in regard to the first efforts made in Battle Creek in the publishing department. About 80 assembled. How small was the beginning of the work, and how limited the wages received. What self-denial and self-sacrifice had to be exercised to carry on the work. I spoke about an hour. This was to me a very precious meeting, Letter 23, 1883. Sunday was a full day. In the afternoon at 4 o'clock she spoke in the public square on temperance, to a crowd of about 400. She had an appointment to speak to the patients at the sanitarium Sunday evening. About 300 crowded into the parlor, spilling out into the hall and porch. She was pleased at the reception of her remarks and reported that the atmosphere at the sanitarium, as far as religious interest was concerned, was in every way improved. She credited this to the efforts of Lucinda Hall, now the matron, and Mrs. Sawyer, Ibid. Getting the feel of things in Battle Creek, Ellen White decided to meet a second time with the employees of the Review and Herald. She could do this Monday evening, August 20th. Uriah Smith's rather cool attitude toward Ellen White and her work could be felt by those who worked around him at the publishing house. She would be leaving in a day or two for camp meetings in New England. The Review of August 7th had announced that Smith would attend these meetings, but at the last minute he felt he must remain in Battle Creek and attend to some important writing. Her report on her second meeting at the Review office reveals the thrust of her remarks. Monday evening, August 20th, I spoke again to those employed at the Review office. I deeply felt the need of a reformation, a transformation of character, with all connected with the publishing house. Unless they would fight the battles of the Lord and gain the victory over self and sin, they could not win the crown of life, the Review and Herald, October 16, 1883. She urged all to act from principle and to place themselves decidedly on the side of right. Then, introducing an effective object lesson, she said, "Unbelief grows as naturally as thistle seed, which, blown here and there, takes root, vegetates, and produces yearly an increased harvest. I entreated all, for Christ's sake, to become established for themselves upon the sure word of prophecy. All should be able to give the reason of the hope that is within them. A vigilant foe is at work earnestly and untiringly to weaken their confidence in God and the truth. The most extravagant, inconsistent reports in regard to my position, my work, and my writings will be put in circulation. But those who have had an experience in this message, and have become acquainted with the character of my work, will not be affected by those things unless they themselves backslide from God, and become corrupted by the spirit of the world. Some will be deceived because of their own unfaithfulness. They want to believe a lie. Some have betrayed sacred, important trusts, and this is why they wander in the mazes of doubt. There are some, even connected with our institutions, who are in great danger of making shipwreck of faith. Satan will work in disguise, in his most deceptive manner, in these branches of God's work. He makes these important instrumentalities his special points of attack, and he will leave no means untried to cripple their usefulness. The same enemy that is even on my track will be on yours also. He will suggest, conjecture, fabricate all sorts of reports, and those who wish them true will believe them. But be assured that the attacks of Satan will not turn me from the path of duty. The work committed to me 40 years ago I must carry forward as long as life shall last. I will not shun to declare the whole counsel of God. Unpleasant as it may be, I must warn, reprove, rebuke, as God bids me, whether the carnal heart will accept or reject the words of warning. For 40 years, Satan has made the most determined efforts to cut off this testimony from the church, but it has continued from year to year to warn the erring, to unmask the deceiver, to encourage the desponding. My trust is in God. I have learned not to be surprised at opposition in any form or from almost any source. I expect to be betrayed, as was my master, by professed friends, Ibid.